Hi, and welcome to NC State's Audio Abstract. I'm Tracy Peake, your host, and today I have as my guest Ben Chapman, who is an associate professor and food safety extension specialist here at NC State. Ben is here today to help us barf-proof our holidays. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you, Tracy. Yeah, that's my goal. I want to make sure we get through this holiday season without a lot of foodborne illness.
Well, speaking of foodborne illness, first let's start by talking about that. How many different kinds of foodborne illnesses are we apt to get during the holiday season? And is there a spike at this time of year?
So we actually see about 48 million cases of foodborne illness a year in the U.S. What that sort of calculates to is about 1 in 6 people are going to get sick every year. And while there is some seasonality to foodborne illness, we actually see increases of cases in warmer months. And it has to do with pathogens and their growth and their ability to survive in the environment in those warmer months. So while we get together quite a bit in the holiday season, and we may have additional risk factors for foodborne illness, it doesn't really demonstrate or come to the top as actual illnesses, like everyone gets sick around the holiday season.
Okay. What types of foodborne illnesses are we specifically concerned with, like in our kitchens? Because a lot of times during the holidays, folks who don't cook will start cooking again. So what do we really need to watch out for in our kitchens?
Absolutely. And so I'd like to break these into different types of pathogens. On the bacterial side, we really are concerned about Salmonella, which is a common one that you might have heard of, but also Campylobacter, which is a less common bacterial foodborne pathogen. And it is, if not as important or as much as Salmonella out there from a prevalence standpoint, it may actually be more. But both of those bacterial pathogens are strongly associated with consumption of poultry. They're naturally occurring in turkey and chicken. And so around the holidays, when we're eating a lot more poultry or handling raw poultry, it becomes an issue. We also, not just, to move away from bacterial foodborne pathogens, we also see viruses that lead to foodborne illness. And norovirus is, of those 48 million cases, we estimate that it's probably around half of them are linked to norovirus. And norovirus, unlike the bacterial pathogens, doesn't have an animal host. It's only from people. And the only way that people get sick from norovirus is from consuming either vomit particles or feces or poop from other people. And that's how it spreads its way around the world.
So hand wash. Please hand wash at your holiday parties, because holy cow.
Absolutely. And one of the other factors when it comes to norovirus is just not preparing food while ill. And, that's a struggle around the holidays. If someone is ill and they have friends and family coming from out of town, they may try to fight through that and inadvertently cause an outbreak within their family.
Okay. Good grief. Well, now that we are prepared and knowledgeable about the terrible things that can befall us, let's talk about ways to prevent this from happening. So, number one, we know about hand washing. We're not going to prepare our meals while we're deathly sick with norovirus because, ew. So let's talk about the turkey, which tends to be the centerpiece of the meal. And we had talked about raw poultry and the problems with raw poultry. So let's go from sort of thawing to prep and what we need to do. So first of all, what's the best way to thaw a turkey?
When it comes to thawing, we really have to sort of be careful and especially plan if we are going to thaw that in the refrigerator, because you've got this large mass of meat that's solid, and we need it to go from this frozen solid state down to something that's a little, thawed out. And it can take time. It can take days, 4, 5, 6 days, depending on the size of the turkey, as well as what the temperature of the refrigerator is. And there's a drastic difference between thawing a turkey at 41 degrees versus 35 or 36 degrees. It doesn't seem like a lot, but that might add another day or two to your preparation.
Is there a good way to tell when it's thawed besides just kind of feeling it? Like, would it be worth trying to use a meat thermometer on it, or are you just injecting bacteria through the skin of the raw turkey?
Well, for me and sort of what would be the best scientific way to do it is really just touching it and making sure that it's not in that frozen solid
state. It's not hard.
Yeah.
It's not frozen.
And often, depending on that turkey, you may still have ice on the inside in the cavity. Mm-hmm. And so being able to loosen some of that as you go along, pull that out, will help with the thawing process.
Okay.
When it comes to thawing and, you know, without us leaving the refrigerator, there's another issue that pops up, which is what happens to all the juice? And that juice, I mentioned Salmonella and Campylobacter before, that's what's in the juice. I mean, we would expect that there's a pretty high percentage of our turkey is going to carry one of those because they're naturally occurring pathogens to us, but naturally occurring in the chicken. Mm-hmm. So we have to do something. We have to try and catch that juice, keep it separate. And especially in a refrigerator, there you may have a crisper drawer that's at the base of your refrigerator. You've got to do a good job making sure that that turkey is sealed, that, you know, we use usually a large drip pan underneath it to catch that out. But I really do treat that pan just like I do the raw turkey. I treat it like it's contaminated with a pathogen.
Okay. Well, and that brings us to the next step. So growing up, we always thawed our meat and then, oh, we washed off all the nasty Campylobacter and Salmonella in the sink. And that is a no-no, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. It's we have some pretty good science on this. In fact, actually, we're working on a project right now here at NC State looking at consumer handling of poultry products. And over the next year or so, we'll have a better sense of what happens when someone washes a turkey just like they would in a consumer home. But there was some work that was published maybe about 15 years ago that demonstrated if you had Campylobacter or Salmonella on the outside of that turkey or whatever the raw meat was, that during the washing process, you can only spread it around your kitchen. It doesn't reduce your risk of foodborne illness because that's why we cook it. Right. We can't wash the pathogens off. Okay. So when consumers ask me about this or when I've been asked about it in the past, especially when it comes to a fresh turkey, people are interested in removing maybe there's some just a little remnant of blood or some feathers. How do I do that without washing it?
Right.
I use paper towels. I just take a paper towel, take all that off, rub it off, and throw that directly into the trash. And then I clean and sanitize that prep area just like I've spread Campylobacter and salmon all over the place. I clean with a detergent or soap and then hit it with a chlorine-based sanitizer afterwards. But absolutely, it's something that not just in the South, but throughout the world, washing chicken and washing poultry is something that has been passed down from generation to generation. And it can only increase our risk of foodborne illness by taking that pathogen throughout your kitchen.
So basically, now you've spread Salmonella all over your sink and everywhere else.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So we have our turkey. It is thawed. It is wiped down. Now we're going to cook it. So to stuff or not to stuff?
I think the correct response is that is the question.
Yes.
So it really doesn't matter. What matters the most is the most internal part of that turkey, whether that be the stuffing or the meat itself, that it hits a temperature of 165 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
A stuffed turkey versus a unstuffed turkey, they're going to cook differently in your oven. You have heat from the inside and the outside in an unstuffed turkey. So it's going to cook. It's going to roast quicker. You may have difference in quality because of that. You may end up with a tougher outside if you stuff a turkey because that skin is going to get hit with a lot longer, higher temperature to get that internal temperature to 165 degrees. And the stuffing is that, you know, whatever is on the inside of the cavity of that turkey, those juices, as they drip out, are going to end up inside that stuffing. So we really need to make sure that we treat that stuffing just like it's raw turkey.
Okay.
And I wouldn't treat stuffing that way if I was making it separately. I don't have to cook it to 165 degrees. I really am only cooking it to maybe 135 degrees to take care of any pathogens that might be there. So there's not a magic way to do it. I worry about this time of year when it comes to thermometers. You know, I throw around 165 degrees and this is the magic temperature. We also know that not everybody has a food thermometer.
Right.
And so it's really hard to figure out whether a turkey is done from a safety standpoint without that thermometer. You can't look at the juices running clear. Yeah. You can't see, you know, if the meat turns from pink to white. All those things, they're linked, but they aren't a substitute for that temperature of 165 degrees.
Because the meat could actually be done, but it's not been heated to a high enough temperature to kill the bacteria.
Absolutely. You nailed it. And okay. And meat changes color, changes property based on a lot of different factors. The age of that meat, whether it was a frozen turkey versus a fresh turkey, is going to change what that meat consistency and quality looks like. The juices are the same thing. All of these things that we've kind of passed on from generation to generation as indicators are not science-based and often can lead to issues. You know, you mentioned it early on. During the holiday season, we may be cooking for more people than we're accustomed to. We may be preparing food not like we have before, and maybe some amateur chefs are taking their first run at trying to pull together seven dishes at a time. And it is complicated.
We've been speaking with Ben Chapman, Associate Professor and Food Safety Extension Specialist at NC State. I'm Tracy Peake. Thanks for listening to Audio Abstract.